the most important key features of the issue of invasive species as a whole. We do live in a world of invasive species. Pretty much everything now could easily be considered an invasive species, us preeminently. Of course, you are listening to KBOO Portland. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd. It is 9:59 a.m. My guest, of course, is with us on the issue of invasive species. Tao Orion has written an incredible book, Beyond the War on Invasive Species, a Permaculture Approach to Ecosystem Restoration. We'll talk more about restoration, about pioneer species, and about being good stewards of the earth that we share with all species. So moving right into the next section, if you've been listening and you're curious, and any of this has piqued your curiosity about what we mean by invasive species and permaculture and appropriate technologies, this is a good time to call us at 503-231-8187. That is 503-231-8187. Call us with your questions right now for our guest today, Tao Orion, who has this amazing, extraordinary book, Beyond the War on Invasive Species. It is it will open your mind to what is right in front of us all the time. This is, I guess, what we mean by pattern recognition, is seeing the world instead of looking at the world. I wanted to, while we wait, to see if we've got callers on the line, which we may have or may not, as the case may be. Please feel free to call up, invade the airwaves at 503-231-8187. James is on the line right now. Good morning, James. Welcome to the KBOO Airwaves. And if you'd like to get a question for Tao Orion, go for it.
All right. So how do you, I guess my I have like one question, kind of another. How do you, first of all, how do you explain your invasive species idea to people who are just, they seem kind of hard-nosed about how they seem to deal with those things termed invasive?
Well, I kind of think about it in terms of taking a holistic look at the species in question and really thinking about whether the issue is with the organism or the issue is with the ecosystem. And a lot of times it can be a lot more difficult to look at the ecosystem and the ways that it's been changing. It's maybe not something that we want to acknowledge, that we've had a hand in significantly altering ecosystem function and structure. But for the most part, and you know, every species that I researched, and I looked and looked and looked for something that would disprove this hypothesis, but everything that I looked at showed a history of ecological change leading up to its ability to proliferate. And sometimes that change, you know, the change is in different ways, but that is underlying invasion processes.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, we don't look at ourselves as invasive species, but I can see where you're coming from, that, that we've caused a lot of it, and that we tend to bring things with us as we trade and move things, so. The other question I had is, your farm, you say you do permaculture, how expensive is it to start maybe, like, doing some sort of, like, permaculturing in, say, your own neighborhood in order to create a sustainable model? I mean, at least to start.
Well, I mean, I think it can happen on any scale. You could start in your backyard, it could start in your apartment balcony, and, you know, a farm is a slightly scaled up endeavor, and it can take some initial investment. But, you know, I like to think about permaculture outside of the box of just growing food, too. So it could mean, you know, connecting with your community and doing disaster preparedness meetings or meetings about creating a local currency. You know, there's lots of different ways that we could think about enhancing our interconnectivity and interdependence and lessening our dependence on industrial agriculture and economic systems that are kind of driving a lot of the degradation that we're seeing.
Okay, yeah, I'm not too familiar. I'm just getting familiar with the idea of permaculture, so I didn't realize that it was just, you know, like, I guess it maybe, I don't know, when I hear permaculture, I kind of think of, like, permafrost. I don't know, maybe that's kind of hilarious or something, but it just, you know, it doesn't sound like it's, I guess on the outside, it doesn't sound like something that includes other, you know, it just, maybe it's a misnomer for my brain right now, but no, thank you for your time and thank you for bringing this up. It's very educational, very thought-provoking. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, James. Don't forget, you can hear Dower Ryan speaking on the 23rd at the First Unitarian Church. She'll be there, and you can get a copy of the book, get it signed, hear her speak a little bit more on the subject, because it is an infinitely enormous topic. And once you start getting into it, it encompasses everything that, literally everything that we look at. That's why we start out thinking about everything as an environment. And James, you know, if you want a garden, just go clear any space and pioneering species will come and colonize it and you can eat them. There. Bingo. We've got Dee Dee on the line. Dee Dee, welcome to KVOO. Thanks for calling. You have a question for Dower Ryan?
Oh, Chris, I love KVOO so much. I love that you stretch me out of the box. You make me question my take-it-for-granted beliefs and my most cherished dogmas and expertise. And you help give me ideas from different speakers. One speaker before was talking about how plants move to an area where there's going to be an outbreak of a virus. Those plants know how to read the virus, how to interact and communicate with that virus and control that virus. And when those plants are disturbed, as in shell in Nigeria or the mass logging, then you may have the Ebola jump from the plants controlling it to monkeys, to people, or whatever else. And just before we have a disease that might be developed by the CIA's like that, we have the plants move in and control it, and how plants are then changing how people think and how they're kind of cultivating us in some way. All these different ways people on KVOO have been making me think so differently.
Dee Dee, wait, hang on to that thought for a second. I want to thank you so much for your kind words. We are fortunate, though, to have Dower Ryan right here in front of us today. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes. So the whole idea about having different plants move in and to actually be kind of the preventative medicine, like knowing about viruses before the thing outbreak comes, and we have the medicine here before we know we're going to need that nutrition or medicine. Can you talk more about that and war zones? And like right here in Portland, where we've got all this radioactivity.
Well, that's an interesting question.
What kind of plants are coming in that we're needing right now?
Well, you know, I am not sure about that. That's not something that I know as much about, but I have heard the herbalist Stephen Harrod Buhner. He was the co-author of a book called Invasive Plant Medicine. And one of the things he talked about that I found fascinating was that the plant Japanese knotweed, which has one of the most potent compounds in its stems and roots that acts against Lyme disease, actually has been showing up because of climate change in areas where Lyme disease is moving to approximately 5 years before Lyme disease arrives. So it's kind of tracking
Japanese
along with the
knotweed?
Yes, Japanese knotweed.
Oh my gosh, we had a huge Lyme infestation in Oregon that people are in denial of. Within Washington, Idaho, yeah, and California, but somehow not crossing the Oregon border with the ticks and deer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much, Dee Dee. Thank you for calling. Thanks to your kind words. Do we have another caller on the line? Sam is calling in. Good morning, Sam, and welcome to the KBOO Airways. Do you have a guest for Tal? Question for Tal?
Good question. I have a question about an invasive species. I understand that honeybees were not native to the Americas and were imported by the Spaniard. Can you comment?
Yeah, that's true. They are not native to North America. And, you know, there are people who have found that they, in some certain circumstances, they do compete with native pollinators for nectar resources. But I like to think about, you know, the fact that now most of our food crops are pollinated by honeybees, although I like to make a lot of room for native pollinators as well. I just think in terms of creating as much habitat diversity, nectar resource diversity, and overall plant diversity for those creatures on my property as possible, because I think that we need to do everything we can to enhance pollinator habitat at this critical point.
Thanks so much, Cora. Good question. We got anybody else on the line? Looks like lines are open right now, so it's your opportunity to call us right now at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. If you have a question for our guest, Dal O'Brien, author of the War on Invasive Species, why we look at invasive species as enemies when we largely are responsible for their presence, either directly by importing them or by creating optimum conditions. And that's what I wanted to ask you about, is pioneering species. And what entices pioneering species to colonize particular patches of land, niche?
Well, largely pioneer species are dependent on disturbance at a particular frequency or scale. And there's lots of different pioneer species. There's native pioneer species. There's invasive pioneer species. And basically, they are acting and engaging with and proliferating in ecosystems where the type of disturbance is suitable to their characteristics. For example, salt cedar on the Colorado River is not very tolerant of disturbance to flooding. And native species of willow and cottonwood require the disturbance of flooding to germinate. And so while there's been this ongoing campaign to try to eradicate salt cedar from the Colorado River, and because of the proliferation, its proliferation is said to impact the germination of willows and cottonwoods, what's really happening is that the seasonal disturbance of flood regimes has ceased because of the construction of dams on the Colorado. So trying to eliminate salt cedar is not going to address the fact that seasonal flooding and the floodwaters that native species require, native pioneer species require to germinate, isn't happening anymore. So
the Colorado River's not happening anymore, yeah, pretty much.
True.
I think we do have another caller. We have time to take another call, maybe two. We have about a minute, 2.5 minutes left. Vernon is on the line. Good morning, Vernon. Thanks for calling, and welcome to the KBOO Airwaves.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you for an excellent show. I live in a recovering oak forest just northwest of Corvallis, and we have a real problem with fescue. It, basically, lawns from exurbia have taken over the forest area. The deer can't eat it. The deer are overpopulated because the cougars are afraid to come this close to people. I wonder, are you familiar with this area, and do you have any thoughts about how we can slowly help this to become a healthier, more diverse area?
Well, yeah. Being from the Willamette Valley myself, I'm definitely familiar with how the oak savanna ecosystem is very threatened. One of the things that I would look towards is the way that it was managed by indigenous people who lived here and gardened in the oak savanna for camas, brodea, for acorns, for thousands of years using low-intensity burning. I think that would really help with the fescue situation potentially.
We are completely out of time. Verna, thanks so much for your call. If you want to know more, if you want to hear more from Tara Ryan, don't forget, you can come to Beyond the War on Invasive Species. She'll be speaking at the First Unitarian Church, 1226 Southwest Salmon Street, Portland, Oregon, July 23rd. That's from 5:30 to 7:30. All that information posted on the KBOO website. Right now, it is coming up on the end of the show. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2015. Tammy Din is our engineer today. Thanks, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOM News and Public Affairs Director. My guest today, of course, has been Tara Ryan, author of Beyond the War on Invasive Species. Come down to the First Unitarian Church on the 23rd here to speak. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, the government of Cuba opens up shop in Washington, D.C. after a 50-year U.S. CIA-driven boycott. We'll be joined by Gloria LaRiva, just back from Washington, D.C., where she was an invited guest of the Cuban government for the opening of the embassy, and a victory by those fighting to keep the post office public and keep those beautiful buildings in the hands of the people. I'm